It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, hey, closet dwellers and closet busters, and even those of you who just want to be more your own unique selves. Now, I want to welcome you to the Coming Out Lounge, but before I do that, I want to kind of bring something up to those of you who are regular listeners. You may have already guessed that this isn't quite sounding like the normal Coming Out Lounge already. You know, it's sounding a little bit different, and for those of you who are my really cool peeps who subscribe to this little podcast all the time, you're noticing I'm not doing the typical intro. And that's because I've decided that maybe it's because I'm sitting here in beautiful Santa Cruz, California, looking out at the ocean, that maybe it's time to shake things up. But actually, it's about reinventing. And it's about trying to stand out just a little bit differently in the universe of podcasting. And as I was thinking about this podcast, it just so happens that I'm going to get a little bit of help with this today. In fact, today's guest has been a really big influence to me over the last year and a half as I've been reading about reinventing yourself and learning to stand out. In fact, her books, appropriately enough, are entitled Reinventing You and Stand Out. And in my opinion, as a guy who helps a lot of people come to terms with themselves, whether it's coming out of the closet or saying, okay, I'm going to be that entrepreneur, or I'm going to step away from a bad relationship, I think these books can help you no matter where you're at. Whether you're starting a business, you're building a brand, you're coming out of the closet. Yes, you've heard me write that these business building books really can help you as you're coming out. So I'd like to just dive right in with my friend, Dori Clark. Welcome to the podcast, Dori.
Hey, Rick. Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And we met a little bit, I guess, right about a year ago today. I mean, so for those of you who are listening to this, we're actually recording this in February. It probably won't air until March. Dori and I met in February last year at a speaking program called Heroic Public Speaking with Michael Port. We just kind of had an interesting conversation about what I was doing, and she's like speaking all over the place. Then we kind of realized we had a lot more in common than just both being speakers and doing lots of different things. We realized we belong to a very unique and special family, don't we, Dori?
We're both really wiki gay. Yeah,
we really, really are. And what I loved about watching you in this very interesting space that we were in, very, I would say, very heteronormative environment, was you were just standing out and being totally you. And I don't know, it just inspired me, because something tells me that it's, like, for most of us, probably taking some time for you to really step into just going, this is me. Is that a pretty accurate assessment?
You know, I would say I came out early, Rick. I was 13 when I realized I was gay, and then 14 when I kind of came out more broadly. Mm-hmm. And I feel, of course, really lucky that, you know, I didn't really face adverse consequences for doing so. But awesome. I think part of it was that because I came out when I was 14, and you kind of know how people are when they're 14. It's right. Like, I'm me, and you need to just, like, deal with it. So I've kind of been that way ever since.
And I love it, because you are just such a, there's very few people that I can say, you just show up, and you're one of those people that people probably go, okay, I think, yeah, she might be a lesbian, but I'm not real sure, but I don't really
want... You think
want...
people think that?
And for those of you, for those of you who don't know Dori, I mean, she is just one of the coolest gals. She shows up in her really cool, like, very masculine identified clothing, but she carries herself really cool, but she's got this wicked sense of humor, and she's so embracing. I think sometimes, I know as I watched some people last year, people are kind of like, okay, I don't know how do I approach her? Because people get so wigged out with this gender non-conforming kind of style that you have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the biggest challenge is that people do get a little confused sometimes. Right. I do get SIRD multiple times a week, if not multiple times a day. So
I love that. SIRD. I get SIRD. There you go.
Once they figure that out, I think people are pretty cool.
Yeah, that's funny, because I get SIRD all the time, but for totally different reasons. Okay, I realize I am old enough to be your dad, but you don't have to always SIR this and SIR that. You know? So how old were you? So you said 13 was when you came out. You kind of did this in 13 and 14. So are we talking in the late 80s, 90s? What time frame? Because I think this is really critical to those that may be listening. Like, when this was happening, what was the world like for you?
Yeah, it was the early 90s, 93, 94.
Yep. Yeah.
Or I guess 92, 93, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And it was totally a lot different than it is today, right?
Yeah, for sure. Even the Indigo Girls weren't out.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
Oh my, I haven't had that flashback in a while. So yeah, but it does. So what was really some of the differences that you noticed as you were going through that versus kind of where we are today? And I want to preface that with, I think you and I and anybody who's in this journey realizes there's still so much work yet to do today. But if we roll back to the early 90s, it was just like, okay, we're just barely starting to put the shovel in the dirt, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things, which I'll name two, actually. So, I mean, the huge one, the huge, huge one was there was no internet. I mean, I guess there was an internet, but, you know, only defense employees
right.
had it.
Right, exactly.
So I certainly didn't have it growing up in a small town in North Carolina.
And isn't it that you bring that up because they had this, but they were already enacting the don't ask, don't tell, because we don't want anybody to know we even have this thing called the internet, you know?
That's right.
Let alone the other ramifications of don't ask, don't tell. But that's something that I don't know that people realize how blessed, for so many reasons, but especially individuals coming out, how blessed they are in this day and age to be able to come out in this internet age.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so I really didn't have any, you know, access to any information even. So the way that I was able to get information, it kind of led to maybe some funny quirks in terms of my coming out
right.
is I was a subscriber to a lot of magazines, and I really loved and love news magazines. And so one of them was called the Utney Reader, which is basically it's kind of a, you know, sort of liberal compendium of the best articles, a kind of roundup of other articles, kind of like the week.
Yep.
And so I subscribed to that. And it was through the Utney Reader that I discovered The Advocate, because they had excerpted some article from The Advocate in there. And so when I realized that I was gay, I'm like, oh, I should get The Advocate. But, you know, I was a teenager and my parents picked up the mail, and it's not like I could get stuff that they didn't have access to.
Yeah, it's not like you could say, can you wrap this in like a cover of Glamour or something? It just wasn't going to happen, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, at the time, it was really funny because they did send The Advocate in it looked like a trash.
Oh, yeah.
It was, you know, the black cover or whatever.
Yes.
But, you know, if every month I was getting some in a black trash bag, like, you know, my mom's going to be like, what's this?
What's this? Are you doing drugs? Do we have a conversation? Are you trying to get birth control? You know, it's all the questions that most, well, as a parent, I guess I would ask those questions too. So,
yes, yes. So anyway, so I realized that was going to be how I would have to get information. I mean, there was clearly not like gay bookstores in my little town. And, you know, there was mainstream bookstores didn't even have gay stuff.
Right.
So that was going to have to be it. So in order to get, so I subscribed to the magazine, but I realized that sort of forced my hand in coming out, because I had to tell my mom, I'm like, look, so yeah, here's the deal. And I'm going to get this magazine. And so I started reading that, and I started reading Out, and that was great. And so it kind of led to two things for me. One was that I ended up with a very political understanding of gay issues and sexuality, because the people that I was reading about, and they were kind of like heroes to me. It was like, oh, my little superstars are like the head of the NGLTF and the HRC and whatever. And in fact, something that I'm like really delighted about is that as a grown up, something that has really been very special to me is that somebody now who's a very close friend of mine is actually one of the people that I used to read about in these magazines. His name is Rich Taffel. And he was the founder of the Log Cabin Republicans, which is the, you know, the gay Republican group, of course. And I'm not a Republican, but he's really a lovely, lovely person, and somebody who I think is kind of doubly brave, because it's not super popular among gay people necessarily to be an out Republican.
Exactly.
So I have admired him for a long time, and now I'm proud to say he's a good friend. So there was that. But yeah, so tied into the whole fact that there was no internet or whatever, I had to read these magazines. It was not until I had been out to myself for more than a year that I actually even ever met my first gay person. Not even like, oh, I didn't have a girlfriend. I did not know a gay person until a year after I came out, which I think is probably, thankfully, not the case, I'm guessing, for most people coming out today.
Well, I would hope so. You know, one of the things that I do, I speak on a speakers bureau for PFLAG in the Southern California area, and I brought this up a couple of times, I think, on the show, but It's interesting to go into the university setting these days because we speak on gender panels, gender issues, you know, sociology, psychology, all those different kinds of courses. And we used to ask, well, we still ask the question, but we used to ask the question, how many of you know somebody who's gay or lesbian? And, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, there'd be like a smattering of hands. And now when we ask that question, pretty much everybody in the class raised their hands. But now when we ask the question, how many of you know someone who's transgender, we're back to a smattering of hands. So it's a beautiful testament to where we are as a culture and how we're moving through these social, quote, norms, so to speak. I totally hear what you're saying because it was so different. You know, I remember in the 90s, I was struggling with my own coming out as a married man. And I was just so excited when I finally discovered like AOL chat rooms. I was like,
yes.
Oh my gosh, there's people like me. There's other men like me. Like me, you know, it's amazing to see where we have come. Yet, like you said, it would be surprising to hear if somebody didn't know somebody who was gay or lesbian, you know, if you heard that. But I actually wouldn't be surprised. I don't think I'd be a little shocked, but I wouldn't be all that surprised if somebody said, yeah, I don't really know somebody else. I'd also go, okay, so can I have the address to the rock you're living
in? Yeah.
So you've moved forward. You've done some amazing work. You are a professor. You've written these two beautiful books. And so my curiosity is, how does this play out on a daily basis for you? Because, you know, you rub some shoulders with some pretty cool peeps. I think I remember seeing a picture of you with our buddy, I think his name's Anderson Cooper at one point in time.
Yes, yes.
So how does this, you know, play out for you being somebody that really people do look up to for your insights and wisdom around business and branding? Do you see this getting in the way as a lesbian woman?
I don't really. I mean, I think that there's probably two factors at play. I mean, one, I'm guessing that the lesbian issue is not such a big deal. I think the bigger deal may come from the gender nonconformity, because some people are just, you know, like, this is total conjecture because you don't necessarily know what people are thinking. But I'm guessing, like, if they were considering people for, like, you know, speaking at an event or something like that, they might be like, well, maybe this would be confusing to people. Maybe we should, you know, pick somebody that, like, you know, is it going to be like, oh, is, you know, is that a man or a woman or like some, you know, some shit like that. People are so creative. But, and, you know, I do certain, you know, I get plenty of speaking engagements, but, but if I had to guess, I would hypothesize that that might be an issue if someone was, because, you know, like if you're booking something for like 500 people and you're kind of taking a risk about what other people's perceptions might be, then they may want to play it safe. So that's,
I think you're spot on there though, because I think we have moved to a space where, like it or not, people are kind of like, okay, we get this gay and lesbian thing. It's out there. But it's kind of like wrapping your head around the whole transgender identity. You know, there, people are saying transgender movement. I'm like, it's not a movement. It's just who these beautiful people are. But I think it's that mental thing we go through as humans, like, okay, I can get this. Oh, but now you just threw a new wrinkle in this because you're showing up and you're a woman with short hair. You're wearing like shirts and sweaters and jackets that, you know, are very masculine in nature. So now my head's got to get wrapped around that. And I can see where that's a big mental stumbling block for some people. Instead of just going, okay, this is what she's comfortable in, which would be my guess, right? You're just comfortable in those types of clothes. It's kind of like Steven Tyler and going, okay, but I realize he's this really big rock star, but he wears such feminine clothes. Well, if that's what he wants to wear, that's what he wants to wear.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it is actually really interesting because I think that, you know, in terms of the feedback that I get from some people, you know, I hear, and I've heard it enough times, you know, for it to certainly sort of feel like a pattern. I hear from a lot of people like, oh, you're so authentic. You're so authentic. I think that, you know, what that means is that I think people to a certain extent may still feel it's a little rare to just be, you know, really openly gay and sort of willfully contravening gender presentation norms.
Yeah. But I think those gender presentation norms are what's so beautiful in this day and age. I know as a father of two, it's hard to say it, young women now, because I do see them as young women. Because my youngest one's going to be only a couple of more years as a teen, but to just watch them in their world be much more accepting and demonstrating their own ways of showing up in gender nonconforming ways. You know, my youngest one, she's totally into her like flannel shirts and, you know, t-shirts and all that sort of stuff and her kind of combat boots. And to most people that would be, oh, that's very masculine. And yet when she puts it all together, I don't see masculine or feminine. I see her as she is.
Right.
And who she is. I'm sure this is part of, you know, what you deal with, as you've just kind of shared from time to time, these ideals that people have of, okay, well, this is what's supposed to be. In fact, it was kind of ironic. I wanted to snap a picture, but I was kind of in a hurry on the road yesterday coming up to Santa Cruz, but I stopped at a rest stop to go to the restroom, and there was a VW van, you know, like one of the old surfer vans stopped there, and I couldn't really see this person, but it was tall, lanky, had a headband on, like a, you know, kind of an Aunt Jemima headband on the head, skirt, long, long sweater, and the more I kept looking, I'm like, I do believe that's a guy. And as I started to pull away, I'm like, it is a guy. And I wanted to stop because I wanted to just walk up to him and say, I want to just commend you for just being you. Because you could, I could just tell by the way his movement was, he was just so comfortable and he had a beard. And, you know, I could just tell he was just one of those people like, I'm going to be me. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So for you, when did this really start being like, okay, I'm going to assume again, and I hate to do that because that makes me a big ass sometimes, but I'm going to assume that this whole gender nonconforming stuff started pretty much from the moment you said, okay, this is me at age 13 and 14. You were probably already kind of pushing the boundaries in your dress.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, these things, you know, and it's interesting because to a certain extent, the rise of awareness in transgender issues is, I mean, I think overall it's a really good thing, but it also kind of, it's interesting, you know, how it's framed sometimes, because in some ways there's a movement to just kind of like blow up gender.
Yep.
But in other ways, I think sometimes it might be confusing for people because they might assume, oh, well, because, you know, gender reassignment is a thing now, people who are masculine, you know, they might start as women, but then they're going to become men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I'm not interested in transitioning. I don't consider myself transgender.
Right.
I just consider myself a sort of masculine presenting woman.
Yeah.
And so I feel like my mission or my contribution, as it were, my inadvertent contribution,
sure,
is to hopefully just kind of widen the spectrum of what people think of as possible as a female identity. And so for me, yeah, this is something that, much like gender identity is something that is pretty much inborn, I think, you know, where one falls on the spectrum of gender presentation to a large extent is that. I mean, you know, certainly people have fun and experiment and go in, sure, different directions. But for me, I mean, since I was a little kid, since as young as I can remember, I've really not been comfortable in dresses and all the sort of super feminine trappings. That's just kind of not my thing.
Yeah. You know, my youngest one, she'll have her moments where she likes to get all dressed up and what I would say be more, I hate to even say the word girly because that's not what it is, but just be more feminine. But for the most part, she's like, yeah, I like my ripped jeans, my flannel shirts, you know, my t-shirts. And she's just real casual kid, kind of the skater kid, you know. And
yeah.
I really admire that she can be, and we went through some challenges around that for about a year of her trying to land and find herself. But I admire her for just saying, I'm going to just be my version of what femininity means to me. And, you know, I think at 17 years old to have come to that beautiful space takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage. But I've also seen it pay dividends for her, which kind of leads me to the questions, because I want to start talking about your books, because I always love taking something that some people go, okay, why is Rick talking about this? We're supposed to be talking about coming out. And then suddenly now he's going to talk about business and branding and all this stuff. But the reason I said your books have inspired me, not only as a business owner, but I found just numerous things throughout the books that I go, this can speak to someone who's struggling with their sexuality and coming to themselves and reinventing who they are. Now, I don't want to imply that to those that are listening that coming out is a reinvention of who you are. I think there's pieces of it that are, but you've always been who you are. But I think in Dory's books, there's some really beautiful wisdom about the parallels of developing a brand and marketing yourself that can be overlaid into the whole coming out experience. So talk a little bit about reinventing you. Where did that really start to come from when you decided to, you know, people talk about their books like, well, one day I was sitting around smoking a cigarette. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to write this book. It's like, well, that's not exactly how it happens, but there is a little bit of divine intervention, I think, that happens. So where did the whole idea for reinventing you start to surface for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have kind of put your finger on it, Rick, because, you know, these are business books that are intended for everybody. And I mean, neither of them, neither Reinventing You nor Stand Out, you know, talks in any explicit way about sexuality, but at kind of a foundational level, they're really gay books. Yeah. You know, they're, I mean, it's a book, they're both books that have been shaped by my experience. And I think in many ways, it's trying to share with a broad general interest slash, you know, statistically predominantly heterosexual readers, an experience that I think a lot of gay people, you know, have to learn in order to be able to be successful, which is that we need to control our narratives. We can't let other people tell the stories about us because they're probably not going to be helpful or useful or favorable stories. We have to take the reins on that and say, you know, no, you know, this is who I am. And I think sometimes a misunderstanding that happens about personal branding, and part of the reason that people get twitchy about it, they think that it means getting some external standard and conforming yourself to it. And I'm very ferocious about this, that no, it's actually the reverse. It's actually about getting clear on who you are, articulating that, and making sure that people understand why that is so important and why that is so valuable and why you have a unique contribution to make. You know, no gay person is going to be able to be successful if we just adopt the identity that society, you know, wants to toss on us. We need to invent our own identity and claim it and own it. And I think that that's a lesson that heterosexual America can learn from the LGBT community.
I agree 100%. And so I want everybody to take away that the word of the day is twitchy. I love Dory's word twitchy, because I'm like, okay, now we've got a word to play with here today. But I also, as you were speaking, I feel this just insane need to say what Dory said about have to do this is so correct. When you own your own narrative, and I'm going to overlay this even into our own gay community, just because Dory's a lesbian and I'm gay doesn't mean we have the secret sauce to how you need to be gay or lesbian in the community, which is no different than how the heterosexual world wants to tell us we have to be. So when you own your narrative, it's not only going to help you in the heterosexual normative, it's going to help you in our homosexual normative that everybody in our community tends to think, okay, now that you're out, this is how you do. There is no blueprint. And you've heard me say this numerous times on this podcast. There is no blueprint. And to own your own narrative and be in yourself is truly the greatest gift you can give yourself, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that kind of leads to the other book, which is, it's also part of helping you learn to really stand out. And this isn't about standing out. It can be. It can be standing out as an advocate. It can be standing out as a true, you know, flag-bearing, gender nonconforming person. But when you own your narrative, I believe, you just kind of naturally stand out as somebody that people say, like you've already said, people say about you, Dory, you're so authentic. I've had people say to me, wow, you're so transparent, you know, and whatever that journey is for each individual, I think this is where the standout piece starts to come. So from Reinventing You, which is, again, folks, go get the book, read it, put your open mind on and read it as if, okay, this is a coming out book, because you'll find gems in there. Then we get to Stand Out. So now that book's been out, what, a year, year and a half now?
A little less than a year. It came out April 2015.
Yeah. So what was the impetus for that one? When you take and overlay that now into business, I know what it's for, but if you were to say, how could somebody who's coming out, you stand out, what would be some of the keys there for them?
Yeah, well, I think that the way that I see the two books fitting together is that Reinventing You is a book about transition. It's about a book about how to get yourself to the place that you want to be. Yeah. And, you know, in the business world, of course, it's, well, how do you get to the job that you want or the career that you want? You know, in the gay world, let's say it's, you know, how do you get yourself to the sort of level of personal comfort and, you know, security and identity that you want? Yeah. And then Stand Out is basically about owning it. You know, it's about really, like, you know, flying the flag. It's about, you know, in the professional world, it's okay, well, you found, you know, the job or the company that you like. Right. How do you get known as being an expert? How do you get known as being among the best in your field? And I think in the LGBT world, it's about just, you know, how do you get so confident in your own identity that you become bulletproof? You know, how do you just be able to put yourself out there in a really confident way so that other people look to you and are like, damn, I want to get to know that guy. I want to get to know that girl.
I know you don't know this, but I'm working on my newest program and actually marching toward a book where I take what you just said, this confidence to own it. I mean, this is about you being so confident and owning who you are that, as you just said, you're bulletproof. I have this belief that in order for you to really get past this, I'm not weird, I'm not quirky, I'm not, you know, whatever these things are that people say when you're different than others. To own your uniqueness, the first place you got to go is to be completely confident. Confident in your uniqueness in the world. And that's all I'm going to really say because that's coming.
Yeah, good for you, Rick.
It's a really, and you and I have talked about kind of the whole Point One Project stuff that I was kind of playing with. This is kind of the genre of, this is what's going to make you a great entrepreneur. This is what's going to make you an outstanding, you know, pianist or a ballet or whatever you want to do. It's going to make you a great LGBT person. It's going to make you a great professor. Whatever it is when you have the confidence to truly own your uniqueness in the world, then everything begins to change.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big, beautiful message that if we can take this to heart as LGBTQ individuals, I think you will find your life becomes so much simpler, even in the moments when you're getting the backlash from people who say, you can't be that. It's going to be so much easier. So, wow, it's almost been already 30 minutes. I can't believe it. I love everything you've shared. If you could really just give somebody a piece of advice about owning this, you know, individuality, this reinventing who you are and this standing out as they come through these closet doors, what would be something you would love to leave listeners with, Dori, as we wrap up here?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one of the points that I make in Stand Out that I think is really important is in the section about how do you get known for your ideas? How do you, you know, sort of really build a following, as it were? The first step, and I think it's one that a lot of people overlook, is that sometimes people think, oh, well, if I'm going to be, you know, if I'm going to put myself out there, I just need to, like, you know, have some idea and, like, share it with the world. And I mean, yes, that's true, but that's not the first thing that you do. And I think that's important to realize, because sometimes you need a little extra support. You need people to help you refine things a little bit before you throw it out into the world. And so that's why I think something that's really important, and in interviewing these 50 top thought leaders across a spectrum of different fields that I interviewed for Stand Out, what I realized time and again is that they have an inner circle. They have a network, a tight-knit network of, you know, small, but it's trusted people who have their back and who they really trust to provide honest feedback. And if you don't currently have that in your life, that is the thing that you should work on first, above all else, is cultivating a circle of people that you trust and respect and that believe in you, and that you can have a you know, mutually beneficial, respectful, symbiotic relationship with, because those are the people who can help support you and guide you to being your best self.
So I'm not laughing because of what you said, because it's so spot on. What I'm laughing at is this is one of those moments where I'm going to say to the listeners, so the universe is going to keep teaching you a lesson until you really get it. This is probably about the 30th or 40th person who has come on the podcast who says you need a really supportive inner circle. So we're teaching you this lesson once again, folks, that this is true, whether it's in business, whether it's in coming out. Find that inner circle that you can truly lean into, and just know, as Dori said, they've got your back. Doesn't mean they're going to always love on you and, you know, all that, but man, have that group that you can go to and say, okay, here's where I'm at, because whether it's the coming out or then suddenly deciding to come out at work or going through your first relationship struggles outside of the closet, man, having that inner circle is key. It is so vital. And something else that I think, I know I've been through it, that would really help a lot of people is to go and go to DoriClark.com and do the standout self-assessment you have on your site.
Thank you.
Well, no, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. As I went through it myself, and I'm always looking for the weird twists and turns of how can I bring this into work and stuff that I'm doing, I noticed that, man, I could take this and say, okay, here's an LGBTQ self-standout assessment for coming out and being who you are. There were so many beautiful parallels in it. So I really want to encourage everyone to go over to DoriClark.com and do the standout self-assessment workbook. You can download it. It's what, like 42 pages or something like that,
Dori? It is. It's totally free if you want to get it at DoriClark.com.
Awesome. Well, Dori, thank you so much for joining us here today and your wisdom, your love, your light in the world. I am so glad to call you a friend and to kind of have you in my bigger inner circle where I can always reach out and say, hey, Dori, I got something going on. Can you help out or promote or come visit and do all that? So thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thank you so much, Rick. Always great talking with you.
Absolutely. And if you've enjoyed anything that Dori and I have said, I'm not going to go through the whole thing because I'm going to try and reinvent even the ending here of my podcast. You know where to find me, rickclemens.com. The show page is thecomingoutlounge.com. And you can always find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. And of course, we love love. We love tweets. We love being found on Facebook. Anything you can do for Dory or I, either one, you just help us get the message out with each review that you give us. It helps others see that there's a show out there supporting anyone and everyone in their coming out journey. And with that, I'm going to sign off for another week. It's Rick Clemens. I'm the coming out coach, and this has been the Coming Out Lounge. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.